Good morning, or good day, wherever you are in the world. My name is Chris Lenquist. I'm the CEO of Fluidigm Corporation. I'm pleased to have a few minutes here to talk a little about Fluidigm, our technologies, our markets, and where we're going to take this company over the next few years. So Fluidigm is a 20-year-old company. So next year will be our 20th anniversary. Let's advance the slide. Sorry, I'm not going to read the safe harbor statements. The safe harbor statements are available for you to review on our website and in the slide deck. So Fluidigm, 20-year-old company. Approaching next year. We're the leading, we believe, the leading tools provider, becoming the indispensable tools provider that's going to power the future of healthcare in the immune, in the context of the immune system. We're headquartered in South San Francisco. We'll be manufacturing in Singapore and in Toronto in Canada, as well as in South San Francisco and San Francisco on the West Coast. More than 500 employees, more than $102 million in revenue just this past year. We have a large install base that's rapidly growing in terms of 1,300 active instruments, more than 2,500 publications and growing, and a very strong patent estate that protects our twin technologies of microfluidics and mass cytometry, which we'll talk through later on. We've got attractive gross margins. We have the ability, we think, to expand those gross margins over time, generate additional operating leverage for the business, and we're significantly increasing our percentage of revenue that's tied to recurring revenue. That's a long-term macro that we're focused on delivering over the long term for the company. So why should you invest in Fluidigm? I think a couple reasons. One, we're in large markets. We're targeting over a $1.5 billion market space. We're seeing growing adoption across all research categories with an increased focus on tools that supply or study multiple disease areas. We'll pack that or unpack that for you in the next few slides. We're an innovative leader. We've got the premier tools that can analyze more than one element of the immune system in terms of cell, tissue, and fold-free analyte. We're a unique company positioned to do multi-analyte analysis across various substrates and with various technology bases. We have proprietary and innovative technologies, which we're going to present to you in a few minutes, and an attractive recurring revenue model. We're accelerating growth. We've been delivering growth this year. The company has been through a difficult period, really going back to the 2015 and 2014, 15, and 16 time period. And we've left that time period with a much stronger company. Stronger company that can deliver sustained double-digit growth and operating leverage while protecting and sustaining the perhaps improving operating gross margins over time. And that's new. And we've got a recurring revenue or pipeline opportunity of revenue that stretches out 3 years. Let's talk a little bit about the markets that we're in. The market opportunity in gross basis is about $1.5 billion U.S. dollars. We break that into three categories. The categories of tissue imaging, so the high content analysis of tissue, about $100 million market opportunity. The cellular repertoire, understanding the cell signatures that happen on the surface walls of the cells that happen within the cellular membrane, the cascade of signals, proteomic and genomic signals that occur around the cellular repertoire represent, for us, about a $620 million addressable market. And in addition, there's fold-free analyte. These are traditional biomarkers that happen in the circulatory system, that happen throughout our body, and we'll talk about those as traditionally be genomics or protein biomarkers also. Immuno-oncology development is accelerating, and it is probably one of the larger killer apps on our platform. It's one of many. We'll share some more about that in a few minutes. But immuno-oncology development is accelerating. So it's a very large market with $5 billion U.S. dollars that are being spent today in terms of research and development, with more than 80% growth to that number. The discovery and elucidation of biomarkers is one of the critical elements to driving the success of immunotherapy. And immunotherapy, you can see the stack chart on the far left, is showing the number of clinical trials that are exploding with biomarkers. In terms of number of biomarkers, the number and absolute number of biomarkers that are being explored is also growing dramatically. So the bubble chart on the right gives you approximate contrast of the number of clinical trials that are ongoing that have these biomarkers as one of the key correlates or data pieces that are being incorporated in the studies. So what really strikes us is both the absolute number is growing quite dramatically for these trials, and second is the number of questions that are being interrogated, the number of suspect or developmental biomarkers that are supplementing the number of biomarkers that are already being discovered almost on a daily and weekly basis through the literature. And so this gives you a good idea about what's driving some of the underlying demand for high complexity, high content technologies like ours. Now, IO insights are applicable across many diseases. We're going to use I.O. as an example later when we talk about our human immune monitoring panel. But in fact, elucidating these immune signatures across proteomic signatures as well as DNA and RNA is important for the immune system writ large. And the immune system usually mediates hundreds of diseases. These diseases move beyond things that's traditionally understood as autoimmune disorders, multiple sclerosis, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, and so on, to things that strike chronic inflammatory conditions, things like IBS, Alzheimer's, asthma, obesity, allergies. And then some other areas that are not so obvious about the immune system are vaccine response. The microbiome, how does the microbiome impact or is impacted by the immune system and vice versa? And things like reproductive medicine and pregnancy. We have many, many publications that have been coming in place showing new insights into the role of the immune system in predicting preterm labor, as an example. We're very excited that this story will transcend more than immuno-oncology. That's the area that's getting some of the most investment at the moment. But we think those insights will actually be impactful across many different diseases. Understanding the immunome will require many tools. So we give an example here about an arm. You need to understand both a detailed understanding of biological pathways, and you need to match that or marry that with a detailed understanding of immune response. In both of these arms, you have many different analytes that need to be analyzed, many different tissue types and substrates that need to be analyzed. And so you're seeing this complex, unstructured data that's being brought together to try to drive twin insights, those insights of biological understanding and immune response that require tools with a high level of flexibility, with a high level to multiplex, with a high level of ability to integrate new discoveries, to both discover markers and then integrate those into recurring screening assays or questions you want to interrogate over and over again. So Fluidigm offers, as an innovative leader, two technologies that are being leveraged to solve these types of problems. Again, immune response and biological pathway understanding. Those technologies on the left are microfluidics. So the power of microfluidics using a plastic substrate called PDMS, similar to your soft contact lenses, we've come up with an exquisite way to lay that with layer upon layer of these plastics and create channels through those in which we manipulate material, which is reagents. And so we're able to do nucleic acid detection, protein direct detection, and microbiome analysis at a very miniaturized scale in an automated format. So this is some reactions we can miniaturize those reactions up to 1,000 kilofold. And reagent cost is generally one of the biggest drivers of an experiment. And so this is enabling people to stretch their dollars more effectively, and it also allows them to automate highly manual, relatively manual workflows, or things that they've been doing in a suboptimal design space. This opens up the size of the design space for experimental for practitioners. The second technology is related to CyTOF. So CyTOF is a way to use rare earth metals and put them through an ICT mass spec type engine, a time of flight technology. And it really hybridizes two things. The concept of flow cytometry, to be able to look at individual cells flowing through, and then matching that to the precision and reproducibility and analytical capabilities of mass spec. And that's essentially where the lion's share of our intellectual property lands. It allows you to simultaneously measure more than 40 cellular parameters in a single experiment, and it addresses certain technical limitations that things like flow cytometry deal with in terms of spectral overlap in larger design and larger panels. And we've launched a derivative of this recently, which also includes the ability to interrogate solid tissue through a laser ablation module, which represents a market expansion, but it uses the same core CyTOF engine for detection. So let's look at a little bit of how these instruments. So an instrument-based business, we have, if you transcend from tissues to cells to bulk-free analytes, this one from left to right, you can see that on the tissue side, our primary technology is the Hyperion imaging system. This allows you to deeply interrogate tumors in the tumor microenvironment, so the tissue microenvironment, with more than 40 parameters, all simultaneously on a single slide. As you move from left to right, we can then apply this to suspension. So we look at individual cells and collections of cells and ask very similar questions. And we can do all of that in a single tube. So that cuts down the complexity of the experimental design, the pre-analytical work that's done by experimenters, that's by practitioners. And then we have tools to do this on a genomic basis. And that's the systems like the C1 and the Polaris, and then ultimately we can do it with our controllers that are used for sample prep that lead into next generation sequencing called the Juno system, and another BioArc, which is our workhorse PCR engine or machine, so far right hand side. driving strategically, we've reached a key milestone in our development of our technology. And that, so our basic philosophy is penetration, radiation, and domination, which that means essentially put is that we need to be in the key cancer centers, the places, the key opinion leaders, where clinical trials activities occur, where standards get set, where the heavy lifting of intellectual property development occurs in partnership with pharmaceutical companies and biotech companies. That generally happens in the comprehensive cancer networks in the United States, as well as many other geographies. We reached an important threshold for us, and we have 50% penetration of cancer centers, of comprehensive cancer centers in the United States. And so what this tells us is there's a networking effect that will occur. We're getting more shots on goal and exposure to clinical trials in terms of forms of correlates that can be done in data collection. We're seeing new biomarkers that are being discovered, and we're getting the critical tools in place that can be leveraged by researchers where translational medicine is occurring. The second kind of use case that we'll talk about relates to data collection. So data collection for immuno-oncology has been pooled as part of the Cancer Moonshot Program, a partnership called CMAC-CIDC, as a partnership between the NCI and 11 biopharmaceutical companies, who are now doing immune profiling by sharing common data sets. If you go to the website and see the details of the small characters are here, the key takeaway is two of our platforms are included as their tier one assays that they built in informatically to collect data. And so we know that that's part of the information, the composite picture that's being created that potentially will direct healthcare insights over the long term. And it transcends both of our technologies, in our microfluidics, as well as in our mass cytometry portfolio. Moving beyond that particular oncology program, and there's other programs like that are occurring outside of the United States, is around characterization of cell therapy. So here we give some examples, including some industrial partners examples, of how in CAR T cell development or CAR T drug development, they're using both gene expression analysis and partnering that with mass cytometry to measure signals that are important to characterize potentially the applicability of their product to the specific patient they're preparing to give a treatment to. And so what we're seeing is that a key signal, there's other examples of that, a key signal that's moving towards industrialization of mass cytometry, proves the value of multi-omics, both the gene expression profile as well as a mass cytometry profile, protein profile, that's being used to characterize patient populations and drugs to match that, which we think is a key value inflection point for the company. Now we're driving this technology across new markets. And we've now crossed about more than 500 publications on the mass cytometry side year to date through July 2018. That's an addition of 100 new publications just in the first half of the year alone. The publications is only about one piece of data, but if you looked at this and trended this over a plot line, it would look like a curve very much looking like a hockey stick, very similar to what we're plotting on a 2x2 here, which is the technology in the CyPOP engine is on its third generation technology. The first wave of the technology was around methods development, and there's a relatively, for analytical technology, a relatively small, discrete market, addressable market. As we've gone through iterations that improved the robustness of the platform, we're seeing more reduction to practice, and that's when we began to look at cytometry cores, who were looking at translational centers, and some of the most wealthy centers that were looking to make to invest in experimental technologies. We've now moved to the third phase. So we've got a very industrially robust instrument. We put antibodies that we pre-conjugated and built libraries around them. We matched them with informatics solutions that make it easier and easier to interpret the data that comes off of these systems. This is leading to a significant expansion of our addressable market. And this, coupled with the underlying demand in the immuno-oncology space, immunotherapy, we think augurs very well for the long-term future of the company. And in fact, if you looked at the distribution, we have that available on our website, you would see that approximately 40% of the use cases right now of study that's occurring in mass cytometry is generally in immunology or in oncology. But there's a significant fast growing that's distributed across all of these other disease areas. So we can see these patterns forming, and this just tells us and really augurs well for the robustness and the future of our technology platform. In addition to that is microfluidics. So we're also answering broader questions on the microfluidics platform. And we deploy that in two ways. That would be two technical papers. One on the left side talks about using messenger or mRNA and ATAC sequencing for the same cell. It allows you to do multi-analyte analysis at a single cell level that has immune signatures of T cells. So it's very related to the immunome and understanding the composite picture of the immunome, but it's on a microfluid. In addition, we have another set of users that are doing co-detection on our PCR platform for RNA and protein simultaneously. And that's opening up new markers in biomarker discovery using microfluidics. So these are two other hot applications that are emerging that sit on our microfluidics platform. So it's more than one trick pony with regards to mass spectrometry. So let's talk a little bit about how we're going to continue to accelerate growth. The immunome, we think, will provide a 360-degree research view of health and disease state. We think it's going to require a picture, a 360-degree picture, that's going to include tissue, it's going to understand cellular analysis, and it's going to understand molecular biomarkers, all that include at a single cell resolution level. So you're going to really need to look at both populations and then reduce that to single cell based at the single cell resolution level. And so we're very uniquely positioned with a portfolio of products that can deliver single cell resolution across a multi-omics, to answer multi-omics questions. And that's our core value proposition of the company, and I think it presents us in a very unique position in the world. We've got an active install base that's already taking advantage of this unique value proposition. We have more in just the mass spectrometry space, more than 200 active installs here. We provide updates on an annual basis. You can see this on our website. It gives you a snapshot, and the footnotes describes what an active user is. But this is effectively what is, this is giving you the number of units that we have in place across the two major technology platforms, mass spectrometry and microfluidics/genomics. And it gives you a sense of the pull-through, the recurring revenue potential for each of these systems. In terms of the whole population, it gives you a range of pull-through. There's a pull-through here for consumables, and there's additional services contracts that occur on an annual basis that have an additional number that's not included in this particular slide. We give updates on a quarterly basis on where we're in the range or outside of the range. And since last year, we've increased the guidance that we've given this area by 10% in two of the categories. And so this gives you, as we're adding new instruments, we're also getting them up to their full level of productivity faster and faster as a company. And part of that I'll get into in a minute is through the formation of the deployment of fixed content. High pull-through customers, so the top decile of our customer base, can draw very significant, generate very significant consumables sales on these systems. So we give examples in our slide deck here of our various across examples of types of customers, the phenotypes of those customers, and the potential pull-through that they're experiencing. And so you see mass cytometry can pull in up to $130,000 or more of revenue per annum tied in our top 10%. And then things like our genomics platform, our PCR platform, can pull up multiple of its, can pull up $440,000 of consumables per instrument placement. Those are highly leverageable systems that are strategically very important for the financial health of the company. Now, part of the way we're unlocking this is through new applications that drive the basic consumables. So our system has been traditionally an open platform in the sense that you had a lock key, you had a cartridge, you had the use of the guard, but customers brought their own content and put them onto this microfluidic. In mass cytometry, we provided the labeling detection kit. We did provide antibodies that you could consume, but others could also bring their own antibodies. So there's a lot of configuration that occur in the user's hands. Where we've moved forward is we've now developed and been commercializing more fixed content, more things that help questions that we know researchers and scientists are going to ask over and over again. And we've been pre-kitting those and pre-packaging those with software solutions to get to their answers faster and to run more better utilization of the instrument and get them on either the next experiment or get them onto the deep clinical insight they'd like to use. And so we're doing more and more complete workflows. And this really represents an evolution of the company over the last few years from a highly research-centric business to a more complete workflow solution seller. I'm just going to give you a couple of examples of how we deployed this philosophy just in the last few quarters. So the first example is I believe we're revolutionizing human immune profiling. And we're doing that through a technology that we're commercializing called the MacFAR Human Immune Monitoring Panel, or KIT panel. And we've taken lymphocytes, monocytes, dendritic cells, some of 29 of the most common markers that are used in coming up with a composite picture of immune health or immune profiling. And we pre-titrated those, put those in a pathologist-verified antibody into a single tube, and we matched that with an informatic solution, and it reports that you can run and achieve within 5 minutes. This is a huge step forward from an industrial perspective. It's taking a, essentially a bespoke solution that people had to develop and bring their own informatics tools and their information content to, and try to figure out how to use it on their system. Instead, we're giving a thing that we think a really nicely packaged solution that's helping fast followers to come up very quickly, and it's also providing nice incentives for established users to move their current system or their current panels over to technologies like this one. And so this gives you a signal of the direction that we're heading as a company. We see plenty of opportunity to expand fixed menu and fixed panels and content for the future, and that will deliver more and more recurring revenue on our platforms. Plus, as it fully utilizes existing systems, then we'll see expansion capacity required. I'll talk about that on part of all. A second example is our Advanta IO gene expression assay. So we've done a very similar approach to kitting and looking at some of the most common gene expression signatures and putting that all in a packaged kit with a protocol and an informatic solution that matches to our Juno controller, Advanta pre-analytical platform, and our thermocycling platform called the Biomark. So in this case, we're selling a complete workflow that involves multiple technologies. They're all locked. And the third is single-cell genomics, an area we've talked a lot about. But we've recently commercialized multimodal single-cell assays that measure T-ATAC, which is, again, useful in immuno-oncology and understanding T-cells, and full-length single-cell mRNA sequencing. We continue to innovate in the single-cell space, and we're committed to our user group, and we believe optimistically that there's a strong future for single-cell genomics. We'll continue to be a destination product for that space. So in terms of long-term revenue growth, I think there's really three elements that are going to drive sustained, growing, double-digit business. Our instruments platform, we're going to continue to place new instrument platforms. There will be some variability from period to period, but I think we have a strong, healthy demand macro that's setting up for us for in terms of new cancer centers that we'll need, new either expansion capacity or have not purchased the kits for some penetration in the market so far for exposure. We have ample opportunity ex-US, and we already seen significant traction in major developed markets around the world in this technology base. We have a strong pull-through, so we have a lot of key systems that drive us recurring revenue in the form of consumables, and we've got very good at modeling the sort of power and intensity of those consumables. And we're also launching new products that will drive better consumable utilization on our platforms. And third, we're adding services revenue, so maintenance of those services. We have a strong service infrastructure worldwide that allows our customer base to be supported. And that's an area that's an important profit center for us, both that delivers on our brand promise, but it also delivers good margin contribution. So all three of these together, new instrument placements, consumables, new content that we come to market with, and services represent a very attractive consumable or multi-year recurring revenue stream. Last quarter, for instance, we had about 55% of our revenue came from this mix, type of mix of recurring revenue, consumables and services. Growth is number one and number two priority for the company, but I would be giving short shrift to a significant portion of our employees that are focused on operational efficiency and driving productivity. We believe there is significant opportunity for us to use our innovation and couple our innovation with changes and improvements in our cost of goods sold and a better rational deployment of our operating expenses. So, for instance, those of you who followed the company for a couple of years will know that we took a significant amount of cost out in our OPEX business, in our OPEX, about $21 million in the last year and a half. We operate this business today with more than 100 less people than we operated the business a year and a half ago. We're generating significant operating leverage, and we're delivering growth at the same time. And I don't think we're doing that sacrificing the future either. We've also made investments in hiring process excellence professionals to build our own internal improvement programs, and they're focused all across the business from order to cash. So we see plenty of opportunity for everything from PO process, from order entry all the way through execution and invoicing to create better efficiency in the company. Second is we hired a head of operations, global operations. This role had not been united, had not been a single head of global operations before I joined the company. He comes with a very experienced background. We have a multi-rooftop business model, and he's looking across. We also had a supply chain leader, and both of those areas we're going after aggressively. We're hopeful to have things that we can talk about and wins that we can talk about in the coming quarters. conclusion, I think we've raised a very attractive report. Positioning this company in very large and fast-growing markets that have strong scientific demand and the potential to have a very significant impact on human health and care in the long term. We're an innovative leader that provides a unique picture of the immunome. We can combine both a single tissue analysis, cellular repertoire, and biomarkers that are circulating throughout the blood and body to combine all three of those modalities to elucidate new understandings. And we can do it plus a multi-omics set of platforms. And we're doing all that with proprietary technology that's built on a patent state of more than 800 patents. And so I see us really continue to accelerate growth from where we are today. And I think we'll continue with doing it with financial discipline and a tremendous level of optimism for the impact we can have in healthcare for years and years to come. So with that, I'll turn it over for any questions.
For people that are online, if they want to ask a question, it's email myself. I'm Paul Knight at Janney Montgomery. I'm the analyst on Fluidigm, and the email would be pknight, P-K-N-I-G-H-T, at janney.com. And with that, so just email me, and we'll get your questions responded to. Chris, could I start at a high level and talk about kind of in-market demand? I know the academic research market is a fairly large component of your sales. How is that market shaping up in the increasingly positive NIH environment?
Yeah, your point is good. I mean, we've had a real kind of a dark cloud that's been sitting over the industry from a cyclical perspective for years in terms of down budgets in the NIH and real down spending. I think with the clarity that we get on these budgets, the sooner we get clarity, the faster, so more efficient Congress and the way that we deploy the budgets is helping. I do think that we have seen a commitment from the current administration to expand in terms of real dollars, and so far that's being funded through the Congress. And so that is giving researchers a little bit of gasping for air, I think some room in the academic segment to expand their ambitions and spending on capital equipment. I believe that approvals for new grants, you know, has probably never been at lower pass rates. Have become incredibly more competitive. And that's an industry challenge that we'll all face. But from a parochial Fluidigm perspective, it represents a huge opportunity. So in the arms race of academic research, you need to have access to the best kit. You need to have access to the best tools or you're at a complete competitive disadvantage in the world. And I think through our multi-omics tools, things like the imaging mass cytometry technology, mass cytometry writ large, and even the capabilities of microfluidics and biomarker discovery, you need to have access to these technologies. And so we go to these cancer centers, and they recognize, they even get scored based upon their ability, their access to new technologies, and they need that in order to compete for these grants. So I think that, you know, in real terms, there is a lot of suffering, there's a lot of pain in trying, and they have to make we compete across categories, so it might be across another technology, not competing directly with us, but more for the same dollars. And having expanded sales or expanded monies available is really good. It's good for all of us. And I think we're as well positioned, maybe better positioned than most companies to take advantage of stuff like CHIPS and NIH funding.
In NIH academia, is how much of a current revenue?
It's a tough number for us to track. I can tell you I don't have the exact numbers at my fingertips. We have in our appendix, I think, what our academic exposure is. But academic exposure does include ex-NIH.
Okay.
So we have a worldwide business, so we're academic exposures in Europe, which is a very significant portion of the company. So I just have to get back to you on that one. It's not to duck the question, but
no,
we don't have a great
no. And then on immuno-oncology, the market is obviously rapidly growing. Can you size that market for us as well in terms of, do you think it's a quarter of the business, half of the business, and what do you think that market's growing at?
Well, I'll take the second part easy. I mean, it's definitely in double digits. I think it's very strong double digits. If you look at the growth, the bulk R&D spend that's going on there, it's, 50% or something like that, annual growth rates right now. It's enormous, and it's billions. So we may have undersized the addressable market for ourselves. It's hard to say. The easiest way for us to tell, at least have some proxy for our exposure to oncology, is by looking at publications and seeing the mix of publications that's in the public domain. And we have a tool, I think it is on the website, we update it on a monthly or every month or so, that shows an update of those publications and the distribution of those publications by disease area.
Okay.
Immuno-oncology is the largest one, it's been the fastest growing one.
Yep.
It's between 40 and 60%. It's the exact number of skating in demand, but it's in that range.
Okay.
And it's growing at double digits. Our pubs overall have grown like 35-40%. That gives us, that's another proxy.
Okay.
I think. So we're very bullish on this area, and I think it's awesome for humanity and good for us.
And diving into technology a little bit, or, you know, I'm going to all stay on the broader level, and that is, you know, can you talk about your geographies, how you feel about the United States, Europe, Asia, you know, what are plans in Asia, is there uptake there, can you kind of hop through the markets geographically for us?
Yeah, I'll just reference, the easiest one is just do a snapshot from a revenue perspective geographically that we gave in the most recent quarter. So as an example, in the United States, we had approximately 45% of our revenue in the second quarter came from the United States. Europe was the next largest segment, about 32% in the prior quarter period. Asia Pac was about 20% of the revenue of the company. That, again, in that measurement period, 3% was probably scattered in Canada, I'm sure it was.
Yeah.
So you get a pretty good distribution. This is a global business. Our U.S. business has probably underperformed for the last 8 quarters or 7 quarters. We've talked about that in prior calls. We had growth in the prior period for the first time in the U.S. business. So I would expect that our probably should look like 50%. And on a steady state basis, when we get really healthy, will be approximately half of our revenue will come from inside of the United States, and approximately half of it will come from ex-US. From where we are right now, I think the market growth potential is equal across all three geographies. I think this area is wide open in growth. The sort of challenges we were facing were things like the health of our sales organization in various geographies. So Asia Pacific, we had been performing very well in China, but we had not performed really well the rest of Asia. We've made changes, both in terms of regional leadership in Asia. I brought in an experienced leader who had formerly been the Illumina APAC leader, so it was really well established. And we looked at our distributors, and we kind of did a top-to-bottom review, and we put our distributors on notice they weren't delivering, and we looked at ourselves in the mirror and said, were we giving them the right tools to sell in the various markets? And where we've focused, we've seen effort. So, for instance, we talked about in the last quarter, we had our first sales in Korea. It was a mystery to me why we didn't have a lot of business in Korea, and I think it was a distributor problem. And so we've gone and fixed that. We added a new country leader in Japan. So Japan also was effectively an unperforming region for us, and there was no reason why Japan should be performing. Japan has had challenges, as you know, at a macro level. But for the sort of research that we're doing, it's one of the big focus areas. And so as we got an experience to live in a COVID factor in the case of our country leader for Illumina. We've seen real results and a much stronger sales team, and our Japan business has been growing high double digits. So I don't think we'll necessarily sustain that level of performance quarter in, quarter out, or year in, year out, but this business can grow double digits in all of Asia. And then we made a leadership change in Europe. That was one of the other changes we made last year, coming into last year. We've had significant growth. We've had strong double-digit growth in Europe. And there's countries that are still not performing in Europe for us. So I know there's more opportunity for things for us to fix. And as we fix those, we should expect more good things from ex-US. So I feel good about the basic picture of the geography mix. And there is some slight differences in the consumables mix by geography, but as we're getting its natural progression as we get this replacement, there's a lag and then we see consumables coming.
I mean, I'll conclude with the exciting aspect about Fluidigm is, of course, you are able to run the business already at a high gross margin. A company in this industry, typically with two-thirds of business on the recurring revenue side, those firms are able to achieve 30%, give or take, operating margins. What size do you want to be? Do you want to be, you're over 100 now, do you want to be 200, 300? At what juncture do you think you will kind of flip the switch and say, I'm ready to go at a operating margin like more than two or peers?
Yeah, this business can definitely perform at those sorts of levels. I think the 20s and 30s operating margin with this profile, its scale is definitely the sort of pictures we should have in long-term modeling for the company. We've talked about break-even calculations. Everyone can do their own break-even calculations. I think we can get better with operating margin or with gross margin, which will help adjust our break-even over time. That's another reason why you've seen us, I think, being really judicious in our deployment of capital, and we're showing operating leverage in terms of cash flow, improving our cash flow. are reducing our burn rate, is a better way to say it. I think also as we extinguish the convertible debt, which has been an unfortunate part of our capital structure, that will open up new flexibility for us to supplement what I think is a great organic growth story with some inorganic. That will also should deliver a stronger double-digit growth in the top line. And I see no reason why we can't have nice and creative deals that we can tuck into this business. And so, you know, I've run businesses with billions, and I've been very blessed to have an opportunity to do that, and I would like to run bigger businesses. I'm not motivated to the need that we have to, but it's more about I think the market opportunity is here, and if, why not now win, and if not us, who? And I think that we're as well positioned. We've got a leadership team that's run much larger businesses worldwide, and we have a real quest for getting these technologies deployed and having an impact in healthcare. I know we all say that, but it is something that's really, really important to us. And the margins of profitability and all this stuff is going to just fall into place with good business practices, which I think we're demonstrating.
With that, I'd also like to thank Agnes Lee, who was here from the company on investor relations. And Agnes and Chris both go a long way back in the industry, including their time at Invitrogen, where I initially got to know them. So with that, thank you very much.
And I just want to thank you, Paul, for inviting us to the conference and this opportunity to present. And I know you just stepped up in the last quarter and started writing on us. And I think it's another sign, getting sort of support from organizations like yours and your point of view, digging deeper into the story. That this is really an undiscovered value. And I think you're helping us get the spotlight out there on it.
Thank you.